Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. So now it's San Diego with the illegal immigration protests that have occurred around the country in the last couple weeks. School districts, one after another, are outlawing patriotic clothing. So this is a school district, the Oceanside Unified School District in San Diego has banned, they're taking drastic measures, according to the media, that's how they present it, and they've banned all symbols of patriotism, not only American, but also Mexican. They're right near the border, obviously, in Southern California. So they've banned all flags, American and Mexican flags. They've banned all symbols of patriotism, which would undoubtedly include any support for our military, and red, white, and blue clothing. It's all not allowed. And some critics are calling this a violation of free speech, and in fact, the ACLU is chiming in. And I pointed out on this show, was it yesterday? We talked about schools in Colorado doing the same thing. That the first lesson we learn from this, first, pull your kids out of the public schools. Secondly, of course it's good to have pride and to be thankful for your family, your nation, your city. These things are good things. Loyalty and patriotism. But you say, what if the country's evil? Well, yeah, that's typical. And throughout history, countries, governments are evil. And there are a lot of families that are messed up. But even if your family's messed up, it's still appropriate to love your family. And now it depends, of course, on the degree of how evil and how messed up. So a child who's the victim of incest is very healthy if she then despises the relative who has victimized her. And especially if she doesn't forgive that criminal. Unless, of course, he repents, and then she could forgive him, but say, and I don't want to ever see you again. So those are, of course, exceptions to the general rule I'm pointing out, that even if you live in a sinful country, you could still have a healthy love of your country. And even if your family's messed up, you could still have a healthy love of your family. And so it's fine, of course, to show that patriotism. But then you have schools, public schools, that are banning students from wearing anything that would imply love of country or support for our military, for example. And critics of this are saying this is a violation of free speech. That's not true. Now, the first lesson, pull your kids out of the godless government schools. Second thing we should consider from this is that you never want to undermine the authority of adults in the eyes of children. You don't want to do that. So you don't go to war against the principal of a school and try to veto their dress code. You don't do that. So here we have the ACLU pointing out that our U.S. Supreme Court, in a case called Tinker versus Des Moines, this is a case where they were tinkering with the authority adults have over children. In the case of Tinker versus Des Moines, and in that case, the ACLU points out that students wanted to wear black armbands to protest the Vietnam War, and the Supreme Court ruled that the school has no authority to stop students from wearing armbands of the such unless the school believes that there is a material and substantial risk of disrupting the school. And if they can't do that, then they can't censor student speech, and that's inane, of course. And that's why the ACLU likes these kind of cases, because they undermine authority. And as conservative Christians, we love our country. As conservative Christians who love our country, we should not allow that to trick us into thinking, hey, we're going to oppose these schools and fight against these principals who are trying to change the dress code in a way that we don't like. Now, that would be a foolish effort. Foolish. You don't undermine the authority of adults in the eyes of children. You don't help children win battles over things like a dress code with adults when there's something other than fundamental morality at stake. Okay, adults who are telling kids, well, you have to promote homosexuality, or you have to believe in abortion, or you have to reject God, all these things, of course, you take the child's side against the adults. But when they're adults, and if they're public school administrators, you have to assume from the get-go that they lack wisdom. They lack wisdom, right? So what do you do then? Well, what you do is you pull the kids, you pull your kids out of the public schools. That's the goal. And so the ACLU here, they would love nothing more than to show the kids that they don't have to respect the authority of the principals and that the kids could veto the principals. And undoubtedly, many of the kids who want to wear an American flag on a t-shirt or a patch on a pants, it's as much because they want to taunt the Mexican kids in the class as they're in love with our country. Undoubtedly, that's the case also. So don't be caught up just because you're on the side of an issue, which I'm on, that says we need to stop illegal immigration and we need to fix America's immigration problem. That doesn't mean that we should have knee-jerk reactions in every issue that comes up regarding that battle and then foolishly side with the ACLU. Big mistake. Don't side with the ACLU. What's another group that's evil in America? Not only the ACLU. What does that stand for anyway? ACLU. Antichrist Legions of the Underworld. That's what it is, right? Then you have the Libertarian Party. They're similar, right? American Civil Liberties Union and the Libertarian Party. And people who hate God can rally behind liberty, where what they mean by liberty is that those things that were once crimes, we're going to approve of. And those things that God has authorized governments to outlaw and punish, we are going to affirm and defend your right to kill your children, to commit adultery, to pay women to be prostitutes and produce pornography, and so on. Over the years, I've debated a handful of Libertarian Party candidates, and sometimes it's been really fascinating. There was one guy running for president with the Libertarian Party, Gary Nolan. I think he was in their primary. He's been a major Libertarian Party player, I believe, for some time. And I interviewed him in March of 2004. And we get to go down this list of, you know, the Libertarian Party. A lot of conservatives think that the Libertarian Party is a pretty good alternative because they support small government. And that's insufficient to get your support. Just because somebody supports small government, I mean, anarchy is really small government. So the size of government alone is not an indicator of whether a political party or someone's worldview is good or bad. The Libertarian Party is an evil party. It's like a party of immoral conservatives. They support legalizing abortion. They support legalizing euthanasia, killing sick, unloved old people. They support legalized homosexuality. They support legalized pornography. They support legalizing drugs like crack or heroin or you name it. They support legalizing suicide. They support legalizing prostitution. So I remember debating the Indiana state president of the Libertarian Party, Brad Kloppenstein. What a name, huh? Kloppenstein. And I pointed out that the Libertarian Party would criminalize the paramedic, the heroic paramedic, or the neighbor who breaks into the home of a young woman who's committing suicide. And they would literally, the Libertarian Party would block the door and not allow the paramedic in to save the 23-year-old girl who's been depressed for months because her boyfriend left her and just married her best friend. And so she'd be committing suicide, and the Libertarian Party would stop the paramedic from saving her life because their argument is she has the right to kill herself. And I put out this scenario. I said, you know what else the Libertarian Party would do? If a saleswoman makes $100,000 a year selling, let's say, small airplanes to foreign businessmen, and then she's told that she has to accept her customers' sexual advances, if they make any, on her, otherwise she's going to lose her job. So how's that? They got a sharp, young, single saleswoman, and they say, by the way, if the customers want to grab you or make a sexual advance, don't make a big deal out of it. And the president of the Indiana State chapter of the Libertarian Party, Brad Kloppenstein, he said, oh, that's so ridiculous. You know, that's not going to happen. Oh, no, that wouldn't happen. Because they believe, the Libertarian Party believes, that any agreement between consenting adults, for the most part, especially involving sexual immorality, should be legal. And so here's a boss and an employee, and the boss is saying, look, this is what I expect from you. And if you don't like it, get a job somewhere else. How about women who work at restaurants or bars even, and they're bringing drinks and food, and the owner of the restaurant says, hey, look, don't complain, all right? You make a lot of money here. And so that's the kind of world that the Libertarian Party would have us live in. And so we've been pointing this stuff out for 15 years on the air. And there's an article out yesterday by the Associated Press, and they've done analysis. They've done an analysis of online ads for roommates, people renting apartments or cottages or servants' quarters or, you know, whatever, or rooms, a room available in a home or in an apartment, two-room apartment, one room for rent. And they're finding these ads where there's two different rates. There's the regular rate, $700 a month, but then there's the half-price rate if a female roommate is willing to provide sex. How's that? Of course, by our fair housing laws, that would be illegal, but our government doesn't know right from wrong and doesn't really care. And so the Associated Press points out in this article, online ads ask for sex in lieu of rent, that the police show no signs of caring about these ads. And so they list all these different advertisements from cities around the country, a room in exchange for sex and light office duty. No rent. No rent. And so I'm not going to read you the examples in this ad, but obviously this is what we're headed to when we have lost our way and we no longer have a strong moral foundation. And so you have the ACLU advocating, free speech in virtually any circumstance, especially regarding sexual immorality, homosexuals promoting a perverse homosexual lifestyle to children in school, you know, examples like that, and abortion, of course. And you have the Libertarian Party, who they slither under the radar sort of as conservatives. A lot of people think they're conservatives. So you have from the ACLU to the Libertarian Party saying, hey, whatever consenting adults want to do, that should be legal. And so liberals and quasi-immoral conservatives, and we sort of expect it from both those groups. But, you know, our Republican U.S. Supreme Court is, you know, time and time again, you could count on them to render the most immoral and perverse rulings. And then you have our National Christian Ministries that will say, well, if the U.S. Supreme Court rules that a boss can force an employee to have sex with a customer, otherwise she gets fired, then we are Christian leaders in America. We believe all lower court judges should uphold that ruling. Stare decisis. Samuel Alito. And that's their position. That would be their position, right? So we not only have the ACLU working to undermine the morality of our country, which has been severely undermined. Then we have the Libertarian Party that many Christians actually support. And I end up having debates with Christians on the Libertarian Party. And the Christians typically are stunned. They didn't realize what fools they had been in supporting the Libertarian Party. But some are more prideful and they don't admit how evil the Libertarian Party is when they realize what it stands for. And then you have our National Christian Ministries that no longer believe that our governing officials should be held to the standard of truth and do not murder and do not commit adultery and do not steal, but they should be held to the standard of stare decisis, or because it's written. It's written, so there. So I guess I would assume that's where we're headed, right? Because we already know that these major websites are not held responsible for content that they pass on through their website. And these major websites are saying, hey, it's not our job. It's not our job. There's millions of these things. We can't find them. What do you think? We only have a small staff. You think we're supposed to search millions of classified ads to find these sex for rent ads? It's not even possible. Yeah, except that an Associated Press writer making $17 an hour found them. Maybe they never heard of Google. So, of course, they could find these ads and they could pull them immediately. And the government could do so much, but children are at risk over the internet because of the sexual predators that are out there. And our nation is sinking in the mire of sexual immorality. And our Christian leaders are approving of judges who rule in that direction, as long as they're doing so because they're following the process. So that absolute truth is no longer relevant, not for the ACLU, not for the Libertarian Party, not for the Democrats or the Republicans, and not for the media, but the tragedy is, and no longer for the Christian leaders. That's where it becomes tragic. That's where it becomes tragic. And they lament that the governing leaders won't do what's right, and we're not even committed to do not murder any longer. We have greater loyalties than God's universal command, do not murder. The greater loyalties are stare decisis. Stare decisis? What does it mean? It's Latin. What good thing could come out of Latin? So, okay. Our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278. And, hey, these things are not just possibilities. These are things happening. You know, businesses pay women to do the most despicable things and to put their health at risk. And where's OSHA when you need it? The Occupational Safety and Health Administration? Where's OSHA when you need it? OSHA, they're so concerned about the health and safety of workers, and they allow women in Hollywood, women taken by Hollywood and told that they have to do the most despicable things without any kind of precautions. And if they don't, they're not going to get hired and they won't get their paycheck. And OSHA just looks the other way. Why? Well, because probably half of the people working at OSHA are perverts who enjoy consuming the product of pornography. And what, we had the Deputy Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security yesterday? Was it yesterday he was arrested in a sting operation for trying to have sex with a 14-year-old girl? And he identified himself. He found this girl in a chat room on AOL. And now it wasn't a girl, it was a police officer, but he thought it was a girl. And he identified himself by name. And he said, I'm the Deputy Press Secretary for Homeland Security. And I'm so-and-so. He wanted to impress her. And he gave her his phone number, his actual phone number. And sent hardcore pornography to her, videos, trying to seduce her. So the good guys and the bad guys, that distinction has been blurred so long ago in America that many of the good guys are the bad guys. Many of the good guys are the bad guys. Our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. In Greeley, Colorado, David, welcome to Bob and Yart Live.
Hi, Bob.
Howdy. What's up?
Hey, I've listened to your show every day, and I've been listening and catching up on the ones on the website. And I'm listening to some of your work on the criminal justice system, which I'm involved in. And I was wondering, what do you consider would be the minimum age for capital punishment?
No minimum age.
So how does that play with the concept of free will?
Okay, you don't execute someone for an accident. Like if a six-year-old throws a ball to a five-year-old and the five-year-old runs in front of a truck and gets killed, the six-year-old is not to be charged with a crime. If a child has an accident, that's not a crime. But you're talking about where kids like 13, 14, 12-year-old kids in America, in England and elsewhere have taken other children and taken bats or hammers and beat them to death. And so where children become murderers, and one of the reasons that happens is because we have a juvenile justice system. Because with a juvenile justice system where the laws are different for kids, liberals think they're being nice to kids, merciful. But we know that liberals are fools. So in reality, what they're doing is they're lowering the threshold of children to become criminals. That's what you do. Fear works really well for children. And when children know that criminals get punished severely and rapists and murderers get put to death, then children don't become murderers. But in reality, we think we're being merciful to kids, and what we've done is we've lowered the threshold so that children become rapists, literally, and children become murderers. And how many kids have murdered people in America since I've been a talk show host? I sure can't keep track of it.
That's been a few.
Yeah, it's horrendous numbers of kids murdering other kids, typically, or adults.
So how would you clarify, so you believe in capital punishment for capital crimes, but are all capital crimes just, according to our current system?
Say that again?
For instance, in the olden days, they'd execute somebody for stealing a horse.
Well, yeah, that's wrong. And we should have capital crimes for murder, kidnapping, adultery, not fornication, but seducing another man's wife. So murder, kidnapping, adultery, bestiality, and homosexuality, and perjury in a capital case.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Keep up the good work. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you, David. Appreciate the call. And, of course, in America, it was a capital crime. Homosexuality was a capital crime. When Thomas Jefferson was the governor of Virginia, the punishment for being convicted of being a lesbian or a homosexual was death. That was the punishment. You know, in your history books, right? You know that we have put to death, what, thousands back then? No, we didn't. Thousands of homosexuals were not put to death in American history until the liberals legalized homosexuality. They decriminalized it and they destigmatized it. And that's when homosexuals began to be killed in the tens of thousands, in the hundreds of thousands, and in the millions around the world, with homosexuality decriminalized and the stigma removed. And now it's open season on homosexuals for viruses and for their own self-destruction. The suicide rates, the murder rates, and the death rates for homosexuals around the world, millions of homosexuals have died a tortured death since the liberals have decriminalized homosexuality and destigmatized it, and the Christians have been going along, and we could document it. Christians now believe that people have the right to be homosexual, even though that belief, God outlawed homosexuality, and doing so saved the lives of countless millions through history. And now that the humanists have legalized homosexuality, the Christian leaders have accepted that, and they believe that homosexuals should have equal rights as homosexuals. And we could quote to you from our national Christian leaders maintaining that argument. Hey, we're going to go to a break, and we will be back. Call us at 800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. We'll be back right after this. Let me tell you about our catalog, the neatest list of biblical resources that you'll find. We have Bible study albums that begin with not one of the books of the Bible. That'd be fun, like beginning with Genesis or Romans. But we begin with the plot, an overview of the whole Bible, because the plot is the key to the details. The Bible's overview is the key to the details. So we have a manuscript, 320 pages, and it's a lot of fun. People just love reading the plot, but some people would rather listen. And so we have the plot. It's about a five-hour Bible study. Is it more than that? Six tapes. 6 hours. And you could either get it on audio tape or MP3 CD, whichever you prefer. It's $32.95. And you get an overview of the whole Bible. And then We have a series of Bible study albums looking at the Bible from the perspective of its overview. The next one is the tree. What really happened at the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Wow, that Bible study, you'll just love it. I promise you'll love it. All of our materials have a money-back guarantee. And so that also, 6 audio tapes or MP3 CD. And then we have the plot, the law of Moses. How does that fit in with the rest of the Bible? And then the last days, the tribulation, the Antichrist, the kingdom, the second coming. Fascinating, fascinating Bible study. That's 7 tapes, by the way. And then details galore. What in the world is details galore? Well, this album, it evaluates every miracle in the Bible. Every single miracle in the Bible is evaluated in this Bible study album called Details Galore, and you'll love it. I mean, we go through, and the things you find out about miracles that you would never have expected would be true are true. It will blow your mind. For example, do miracles tend to produce faith in the people who receive the miracles or witness them? Or do the miracles tend to produce unbelief? Which is it? And you'll love it. So our phone number, 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. And now we'll go back to the show. And we have, let's see, we have a caller, David from Boone, Iowa. We love to get Iowa callers. And David is very upset at me, at Bob and Yurt Live, because here at Bob and Yurt Live, I'll tell you what we believe, and then we'll go and we'll take David's call. Okay. At Bob and Yurt Live, we believe that the future is not settled, but that it's open. And why do we believe that? We believe that God is free. God is free, and God is able to change things that will happen in the next moment or the next day or the next year or the next eon. That God is not locked into an eternally scripted fate, but that God is free. And there are millions of Christians who wrestle with that. And the reason they wrestle with that, the primary reason, and we've debated this, a tremendous debate on the internet, in fact, with a professor from D. James Kennedy's ministry. And I love D. James Kennedy. He runs Coral Ridge Ministries in Florida. In fact, we were down there. When were we there? We were down there in December and gave a presentation to Kennedy's director, the executive director of Reclaiming America, Gary Cass. And we presented our Focus on the Strategy presentation about legal positivism and Christians holding to absolute truth and absolute morality. Well, anyway, so I love D. James Kennedy, but he believes that the future is settled. Millions of Christians believe the future is absolutely settled and not even God. Now, it's one thing when they say, you know, you cannot affect anything that will ever happen in the future, but millions of Christians have come to believe that not even God can affect anything that will ever happen. Once, let's say, Adam and Eve were created, then today, whatever happened today or whatever will happen tomorrow, not even God is able to alter what will happen tomorrow. And there is a solid reason they came to believe this. And we covered this in the debate I had. D. James Kennedy has a seminary called Knox Theological Seminary, and he has a professor there, Dr. Samuel Lamerson, who's the associate professor of New Testament. And Dr. Lamerson and I debated this issue, whether the future is settled or open, on the internet at theologyonline.com in a 10-round moderated debate, and it was a blast. It was this past summer. People buy it from us in a manuscript form, or they read it for free online. If you come to our website, kgov.com, it's so easy. Just look. You'll see the debate between me and Dr. Lamerson. The future, is the future settled or open? And you could click and just start reading it. In fact, there are about 40 questions there during the course of the debate. It's a written debate. So you read it, and if you think what I'm saying doesn't sound biblical or it's not true, you could look at those questions I posed to Dr. Lamerson and then attempt to answer them and see what answers you get from studying the Bible. Well, Christians have been taught that God is utterly immutable, that God cannot change in any way. And because of that, that is the ultimate fundamental teaching that has led millions of Christians to believe that not even God can change what will happen tomorrow. So that they talk about human free will, and it's really much more instructive to talk about God's free will. In fact, we could just throw out the word free because it's whether or not you have a will. And God does have a will, and God is free, and God is able to do something new every moment. God is able to be creative every moment. And so God is free, and the future is not eternally settled, but open. And with that, I'll go to the phones in Boone, Iowa. David, welcome to Bob and Eric Live.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, sir.
Boy, you certainly have a platform here to promote open theism, don't you?
David, I've been on the air for 15 years. And
not
for,
in Iowa.
No, not in Iowa. We're brand new in Iowa.
Yeah.
And for 15 years, we've been upholding the Word of God, Jesus Christ as our Creator, and God as free and able to change the future.
Well, my question was, can God make a mistake?
No.
So if he determined how much rainfall is going to fall in South Dakota, or as the psalmist said, he ordained all of my days before any of them came to be, could he have made a mistake on how much rain he wanted to fall?
All right, which one do you want to talk about first, the rain or all of your days? Because you just misrepresented Psalm 139.
So, let's go with the rain.
Okay, with the rain first. All right. God doesn't make a mistake. God does not make mistakes. God has all the knowledge that God needs to have in order to come to a decision, and God has an ultimate commitment to righteousness. So that God does not make mistakes. But from that, you deduce that therefore God is unable to influence what will happen tomorrow. And I'm telling you that that was an incorrect philosophical conclusion you make from the fact that God does not make mistakes. And so therefore you think, well, then he cannot influence what is already determined to happen tomorrow. And I'm suggesting to you that that's not true. God is free. David, when you were first convinced that man has no free will, did you?
I was never convinced of that.
Yeah, right. That's because there are millions of Christians who say they believe in free will, but that there's nothing we could possibly do that will change the outcome of the rest of our lives, which is already prescripted.
Well, no, my understanding, philosophers use the term free will in about a dozen different ways.
Yeah, but I right.
And
right.
And
so rather than
I never said
David
that man doesn't have free will.
David, so rather than playing games, do you believe that man is able to make decisions that will change the future, or is the future prescripted, and nothing that we do today can affect eternity? Can we change eternity by the decisions we make today?
Well, I believe that God prescripted all of history, including our free choices.
Okay, so can we do anything today that will change what is already determined to happen tomorrow?
Whatever we do today.
Can we do anything? Can we make any decision today that can change what is already determined to happen tomorrow? That's an easy one, right, David? You believe no, so you could just say no.
Are we sovereign over history?
David, I'm asking you, and why don't we just, we could skip all this part. You could be less coy and say, yes, I don't believe that we're able to alter the predetermined future.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to commit the sin of answering the fool according to his folly.
Well, that's a little bit rude, David, but I'll let you go with that. Here's what I was trying to get for the purpose of the audience. I was trying to get you to acknowledge that there came a point in time when you, David from Iowa, that you came to believe that man is not able to alter what will happen in the future. There's a point in time when you came to believe that. But
what I do influences the future all the time.
Well, but not other than it's already prescripted. You can't.
Of God's prescriptive will.
Okay, right. So when you came to believe that, right? When you came to believe that there was nothing you could possibly do as of this moment that could alter in any way anything that would ever happen in the future, when you came to believe that, whenever it was, let's say it was 20 years ago. Okay, I don't know you. I don't know when it was. But, David, when you...
I'm talking on the radio to Bob Enyer. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
That's my son, Joshua.
All right. We hope he's doing well. Okay, David, when you came to believe that, I have a question for you. If you could think back in time. When you came to believe that nothing man could do could ever alter the future.
I never said that. Man alters the future all the time, but it's all according to God's prescriptive will.
Okay, but we can't alter what has been prescriptive. You agree with that, right? So I'll say all those words every time when I want to communicate to you, just so you could go along so we could get to my question. When you came to believe that man could do nothing to alter the prescripted future, when you came to believe that, were you also taught that there was nothing God could do? Let's say by the time God laid the foundations of the earth, there was nothing God could do for all of eternity future to ever alter anything that would ever, ever, ever happen. God could not ever have a truly new thought or be truly creative again. Everything that would ever happen for mankind and for God was eternally settled. Were you taught that God would not be free or able to change the future when you believed that man could never change the prescripted future?
That's a big question. I don't know if I can follow it all, but I'll
answer it for you.
Well, you can't give my answer.
I could, David.
Are you being God?
No, I've talked to you enough. You've called in a few times now, and I know when I first asked you these questions, you were perplexed and you wrestled with them, and you didn't know where to go.
I was perplexed with you. I was trying to fit, and then I found out you're an old theist.
Okay, well then, David. Okay, so answer this question.
Which is perplexing.
Is God free? Is God able to change anything that will ever happen in the future? As of this moment, things that will happen in the future for all of eternity, as of now or as of the creation of the earth, is God, not you and not me, is God able to alter anything that will ever happen, ever?
Every alteration, every change that occurs is by God's power.
No, you're saying he did that in the past. I'm saying since the creation, as of today, after God created. David, you're saying everything that will ever happen was determined by God in the past. I understand that. And the audience knows you believe that. Now, I'm asking you a separate question. Is God now, or let's say since the cross of Jesus Christ, or today, or since Christ rose from the dead, is God now free and able to change anything that will ever happen in eternity future? Anything at all? Yes or no?
Why would he want to? He didn't make a mistake with his original ordaining.
David, are you able to answer the question?
I did.
No, you asked to God's motives. I'm asking you, is God free And is he able to change anything that will ever happen in eternity future? If you don't want to answer, I'll answer for you. I understand you don't like
God, which is what you do with open theism.
David, I understand you don't want to answer because the answer is hard for you to admit.
No, that's not true.
Okay, well then would you answer the question? I'd rather not answer for you. I'd rather you answer it.
Well,
I'll ask it again.
It's a foolish question. Like I said before, I don't want to answer a fool according to his folly.
Okay, I will answer the question then. I'll answer it for you and then I'll answer it for me. And I've now endured twice that you've been rude to me, but I'll keep you on. Okay, first I'll answer the question from your perspective. You believe that God is not free or able to change anything that will ever happen in eternity future. You believe that. Here's what I believe. I believe that God is free and able to be creative, to have a new thought, to change, to be extraordinary in ways tomorrow.
So he wasn't perfect originally.
No, yes, he was perfect.
How could he be perfect and yet have a new thought?
You sound like Plato, because that's what Plato argued. Pagan Greek philosopher.
Not Plato, but I like Plato.
All right, well, Plato, Neoplatonic thought, the argument from the pagan Greeks was that if anything was perfect, it cannot change. And if that were true, Christianity would be false, because God the Son was eternally spirit. God the Son is part of the Trinity. He's eternally God. And yet God the Son humbled himself, which is a change. He lowered himself. He emptied himself of his quantitative attributes as God. And he became a man. He became flesh. God the Son was not eternally flesh. And when I asked you on the show, David, if God the Father is eternally pouring out wrath on his Son, do you remember how you answered that question?
I said no.
I wish you would have said no.
He scourges all those whom he adopts as sons.
Let me remind the audience, right? That's what you did, and that was sad. I asked you, we're talking about the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, the most significant moment in eternity.
Would you agree God's predestined?
And David, I asked you if God was eternally pouring out wrath on his Son, even at this moment, and for all of eternity future, is God pouring out wrath on his Son? And you gave an answer. You said, well, God chastises the members of the body of Christ. And I realize you were thinking on your feet. Right? But we don't want to make the crucifixion a metaphor for the suffering of Christians, because that's what the Jews do with Isaiah 53, and they say there is no Messiah who will suffer. It's just the suffering of the people.
Christ said to take up your cross daily.
All right. Now, David, I'll ask you the question. Now, is God the Father eternally pouring out wrath on his Son?
No. He did that once.
Right. Very good. Perfect. Another question. God the Son, was he eternally flesh? Was he eternally a man? Or did he become flesh?
He took on flesh.
Did he become flesh?
He took on flesh.
Did he become flesh?
He was God and man at the same time.
Did he become flesh?
He became man. He was God, and he became the God-man.
Right, exactly. Jesus Christ is God. So did God the Son become flesh? Maybe you think I'm trying to trick you. I'm not trying to trick you. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, says, in the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God.
Yep.
The Word was God.
He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him. Without him, nothing was made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men.
And then you know the verse that says, and the Word became flesh. Right? What was that? John 1:18. So that did God the Son become flesh?
Yes.
Was God the Son always flesh?
No.
Right. So Plato was wrong. Plato was wrong in his darkened, foolish mind when he said that anything that changes must have been imperfect. That's false. Because when God the Son humbled himself and when he became sin for us, he took on the punishment of our sin. That was all a change. None of that was anything he had to do. He did it willingly because he loved us. And so God is free and God is able. And when you intellectually agreed with the concept that man can do nothing to alter the prescripted future, what you didn't realize you were buying into was that God can do nothing to alter the prescripted future. You didn't realize you were buying.
God ordained the prescriptive future.
And now you believe that God is unable. You now believe that God is not free and unable.
I believe he didn't make any mistakes with how he ordained things.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it possible that God will shorten the days of the end times?
If that's what he prescribed to do.
No, is it possible he'll shorten? Is it possible that we could hasten the coming of the Lord? You see, the Bible presents God as alive, not as a stone idol. A stone idol can't change. A stone idol is dead, is stagnant.
You should interview Kevin Swanson on this subject.
I love Kevin Swanson. He's a dear brother in the Lord.
Well, I do, too. You should interview him on this subject.
I would love it.
Well, I will tell him you would love it.
Hey, David, let me ask you. We only have a little bit of time left.
Okay.
Do you think it's God's eternal will that I would be on the radio in Iowa on KFFF?
Certainly.
Do you think it's God's eternal will that I would be teaching that the future is open and not settled?
It is prescriptive will. But
I want to know, do you think God is the one who determined that I would teach that the future is open? Was that my idea originally or God's?
He ordained all the truths and all the falsehoods that you promote.
So I want to know from you, do you think that God has ordained that I would teach that the future is open?
What did I just say?
You said yes. And so you're mad at me that I'm doing what God requires of me, that I have no possible choice. I could do anything else.
I didn't say you didn't have a choice.
Yes, that's what you believe.
Do you have a choice?
Hey, David.
Kevin Swanson on the subject?
David, when a man rapes a child and murders the child, do you believe that God orchestrated that rape for his glory and his pleasure?
Do you believe he orchestrated?
David, answer that question. Answer that question. We're out of time. No, you're not the host. I put you on hold. I'll bring you back if you answer that question. If you answer that question with a yes or a no, we'll continue this tomorrow. David? Do you believe that God orchestrated the rape of a little girl in a murder for his pleasure and glory, yes or no?
I believe he orchestrated the crucifixion of Christ.
Okay. David didn't. Notice many Christians are afraid of what they believe because it sounds so raw.